Let me introduce the speaker. It was, if you guys were here last month, you got to hear his son, actually, Damon, tell his story. And as soon as it was over with, I was congratulating Damon on how what great job he did. And he said, first thing he says, "Daddy, you'll do it." and so we talked. I saw you roll your eyes, Damon. I asked Bruce to tell his story tonight. Bruce is one of those guys at the meetings when he starts talking, everybody in the room pays attention. Partly because why he introduces himself, but I'll let him do that. So thank you, Bruce, for being here. Would you please come up and tell us about your journey?
If I hurt somebody's ears, I'm sorry. Bruce P. By God Jenkins, real alcoholic. So by God's grace and the company I keep, I want to thank Joe for inviting me over here tonight. It's been a while since I've been here at Ridgeview. Mr. Lynn Blake and Mr. Dan used to have us down here, but I understand my partner in crime was down here not long ago, and my son. Joe told me today I needed to watch out about the MFers up in here. And it looks like Joe would know by now if you want an alcoholic to do something, tell him not to. But some of us is pretty slow. I thought Joe was a terrorist when I first met him. But I heard his story and I found out the truth about him. But I had met Joe before. And I couldn't get it to my mind. But then I happened to think it was right down there at Ridgeview. Me and him was hanging outside the SA meeting waiting on a woman to come out to slip. That's how I got to know her. So all you women, beware Joe. Try to tell me how to talk. I'll get your monkey ass. I was born the first time in the year of 1948. Next month, if I don't get drunk and die, well, if I just get drunk and don't die, I'll still make it to my 70th. I have a problem with that since all my throat muscles got gone. 70 years old. But in 1994, I got born again. And since that day, it hadn't been necessary for me to have another drink of liquor, any mind-altering, mood-altering chemical. Except bad Bill. I attribute that to somebody dragging me to the detox out there at Hawkins Store Road when it was First Step. That was my first detox. And that was in 86. And when my daughter come got me, I said, "Stop at this liquor store up here, I'm cured." She said, "Daddy, that ain't the way we do it." I said, then again, somebody gonna tell me what, you know. She said, "Well, I want you to do something for me. There's a place over there in Marietta up on a hill. It looks like that damn VFW that you love so much. Big old barn looking building. And she said, there is some of the greatest womanizers, liars, cheats, thieves, make you out to be a wuss. I said, get my ass up there. We'll go to the liquor store after that. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I walked in that door to that 11 o'clock meeting and Big Ed Hare was sitting there in a chair. After all the time that he'd been sobriety, he still greeted people. They don't do that no more with their Rebo, but used to. There's a lot don't do in AA no more. I don't need to get started on don't do it again. But he looked at me and he said, boy, welcome home. I said, damn, it's been a long time since I've been welcomed anywhere. Most of the places I was very unwelcome. But I got to know Big Ed, and he became a hero real quick because there was a good-looking woman come in there, and he said, ma'am, welcome to Rebo's. Come down and sit on my knee, and we'll talk about first thing comes up. Damn, like that. But then I got to know people like Cecil D. Oh, Lord Bess, One-Eared Charles Littlefield, all those old-timers, old Bill Wright, old Meathers, and I could go on and on and on, folks. But I saw this sign up here, the language of love is spoken here. Well, that what they were speaking to me didn't have nothing to do with love, or I didn't feel like it. Because they would call me an outright lying bastard right to my face. Say things to me like, boy, you don't know just how full of it you are. And one little fellow up there that done that wrought iron work, his name was Joe Fisher, the iron worker, welder, up there on the podium at Rebus. He said, come over here, boy. And he called me over in the corner and he said, there's two kind of SOBs we don't need in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you both of them. Why don't you go finish drinking? I got drunk at his ass more than once. Hurt my feelings, how dare you. I come from down in Southwest Georgia, better known as Sowega. Right down between Auburn and Moultrie, Georgia. Went to school in Sylvester, Georgia, which is Worth County. Family farm there, out 11 miles south of Sylvester. It's been in our family a long time, and how it's made it through all those drunks and still be Jenkins, I don't know, but it is. Of course, Damon's the last Jenkins. If he don't hurry up and do something, I'm going to have to step back up, I reckon. I ought to still be fertilized, I don't know. Life coming up down there was interesting at the very least. My daddy was an alcoholic. I can say that because he did. And he was a lot of other things too, folks. But the love-hate relationship that we shared was, I reckon, by the greatest ones ever been. And he made moonshine liquor. He sold it, he hauled it, and he taught me all about it. That's what I wanted to be, a liquor hauler. Fast cars, loose women, and more money and faster horses, you know, philosophy. But then I had a big mama, which was my grandmother, daddy's mama. And when I refer to big mama, that's who I'm talking about, my grandmother. And if I refer to shine, I'm talking about moonshine liquor. Just in case you city folk don't know, but. My daddy got where he liked to drink that liquor more than he did make it and haul it, and he ended up a lot of times in jail. And as time went on, I began to fall in his footsteps. And I watched his alcoholism progress to some pitiful places, folks. I seen my daddy in a bed in the old home place down there 3 and 4 weeks at a time. I have a case of liquor sitting in the bed with him, a case of pills. And now when you don't get up and go to the bathroom or take a bath for 2 or 3 weeks, it gets kind of messy in there. I saw that more than once. And it appalled me, sickened me. Well, guess what? I was following close behind him when the end was near. But he got sober. Didn't believe in God, but I don't know why I'm talking about my daddy so much tonight. But anyhow, when I was 16 years old, I got married. I had the first child. I have 2 children, Stephanie and Damon. Stephanie was the one that brought me and him both to AA. And she stayed sober 23 years and decided she didn't need AA and drank liquor for 5, but she's back now, 4 or 5 years. And old Damon stuck with it. And like I said, I'll be celebrating anniversary in May. And the family affair that we have, regardless of what's in us, these traditions and these steps and these principles play a great part today of keeping knives in the pocket and the pistols in the holsters. Now, that wasn't the case with me and my daddy drinking liquor. We was bad about having a gunfight and a knife fight. He got the drop on me one day and he shot me in the face and twice in the back. And he said, well, how the hell did he shoot you in the back? Well, once I felt them pellets hit me in the face, I hauled ass. Then he cut down on me the second time. Like knocked me down, but it didn't. And my feet were turned so fast I couldn't fall. The wind was holding me up, I reckon. But nevertheless, that was a lot to do with the jealousy about everything that went on, and his alcoholism progressed and mine was catching up, and blah, blah, blah. And he did a lot of time. And my daddy, my brother, and myself was all on probation at the same time under the same probation officer. Ricky said, please, if I make the mistake of scheduling y'all's ass up here together, please call me and let me know. I don't want y'all up here together. My brother got drunk on child liquor one time and beat daddy with a square point shovel, left him for dead in a ditch. Done 2 years in chain gang for it. But looking back on that now, folks, I mean, you know, that's some pretty horrible, terrible stuff. And, you know, there's a lot more that goes with it. But the fact is, when I was a year sober, my daddy died. And he and I had begun to have a relationship that was similar to familiar or kind of looked like a father-son. We'd sit on the porch down at the home place, and I was about a year sober, and we'd talk. Well, I'd be damned, he was in such a hurry to get the mail one day, run down the steps and had a heart attack at the mailbox. Big Mama said he was trying to beat her to the mailbox and see if something had come about some money or something. But the point I want to make here is when we buried him there in the cemetery in Sylvester, I stood between 2 old Baptist preachers and said the last words of my daddy. He and I were at peace with one another. Of course, now, when I made my amends to him sitting on a 5 gallon bucket, I had a pistol in one boot and a knife in the other because I didn't know how he was going to act. But we got to be pretty close. When my wife swelled up, my ex-wife of two times, with Stephanie, my daddy was in Puerto Rico, and I called him. I said, "Daddy, I just don't know about this here pregnant woman. Would you send me a plane ticket?" And I left. Left in the night, caught a plane, went to Miami, Florida, and got on a plane, went to San Juan. Well, I want to tell you something. Now, both of my grandmothers, my great and big mama, were fire and brimstone Southern Baptists. And I've been baptized twice, so that's my second illness, but I'm recovering from that also. I stepped off of that plane in San Juan, Daddy said, "Let's go, boy." And we went down on the docks in old San Juan. The whole houses bumped against one another down there. I think there was about 110 and 30 blocks. I thought I had died and gone to heaven. 1,500 miles from Big Mama and all them Baptists, Puerto Rican rum was a dollar and a quarter a fifth. Hot almighty no. But that didn't last long. We ended up in a fight over there and I had to come back. But that was good because my ex-wife then felt sorry for me. We got married again and long come Damon. So see, nothing to go by mistake. If I hadn't been over there and come back, she probably wouldn't have felt sorry for me. Damon might not be here. I wouldn't like that to be here. Joe, how long I got to talk? Till 10 o'clock. When I left Rebus and go back to finish drinking, it seemed like every time I'd leave, there was one more out of that bunch that I mentioned a minute ago that would follow my ass. I'd be turning up a gallon jug of corn liquor and I'd see Lloyd smiling up in the end of it. There's old Big Ed Cecil up there. "How's it feel, boy?" Lloyd say, "Get him, Cecil, get him." I look around, there was E.T. showing up. And it got worse every time when I would come back. And I don't know why I kept coming back, folks. I didn't know then. I know now. My feet just know where they want me to go. So there was a power working within me all the time. And, you know, all of us that really and truly don't have a medical or scientific or any other reason for being here, we're chosen for this work. And we're all different in our thinking, the way we look at things, you know. I heard old Tom Brady Jr. tell a story one time on tape, said there was this man that somebody gave him a hunting dog. He went out in a duck blind, shot a duck down, and dog walked across the water and got the duck and brought him back. That's a mighty damn thing. Shot another duck and he done the same thing, Walter. Well, he was just at himself. Dog walked walking across the water, you know. Couldn't wait to get home and tell his neighbor. Made a date to go to the back to the duck blind the next morning so he could show off his dog. He got out there, he shot a duck down, and the neighbor just looked. He was at himself. He said, "Man," and he just said, "Well, I shoot a dozen." Same thing. The old neighbor, he looked at the dog, looked around, rubbed his chin. The fella that had the dog was just, my God, man, don't you see something just miraculous and great and wonderful about that? He said, you just don't see that? He said, yeah, you know, come to think of it, said, that son of a gun can't swim. So the way you see things, I might not see things. But see, that's the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. We can all see from our view, but we all have a primary purpose. The unity in Alcoholics Anonymous is phenomenal. It's what binds us, what holds us. We don't always get along, you know. If you think you get along in AA, carry your monkey ass to a group conscious meeting. You'll see. You see, alcoholic come out in the group conscious. But everything is usually worked out. Out in North Carolina, Tom Brady said they call wino gators. He said they call them gators because they so rough. And said there was two of those winos up under a bridge. Said they shook too. You know, a wino don't come to when he's about to go into DT's, he'll shake to get another drink. One of them looked at Dud and he said, man, I had the most wonderful dream last night I ever had in my life. He said, yeah, what was that? He said, my mama bought me a ticket to Disney World. I went in there and rode all the rides, played with Donald Duck, saw Mickey, Minnie, Pluto. I just had a wonderful time. He said, oh man, there ain't nothing that. I had a dream better than that, doesn't he? He said, well. He said, what'd you dream? He said, well, I was in a penthouse apartment and said they was just food on tables and cases of liquor lined up. Two good-looking blondes walk in the door and start taking the clothes off. Old Wando said, hi, damn, man, why didn't you call me? He said, I did, but your mama said you'd gone to Disneyland. Ain't them good clean jokes, yo. After the... I come to down in a jail in Worth County, Sylvester, Georgia. And me and my dad and my brother had bought most of the bricks in the new jail and built them a new courthouse. You know. And when I come to that morning, of course, the old jail, I'd been in there to heat. You know, that's God's grace. I had ended up with four bitcher violators and never done 1 minute a hard time. Now that's a power. Of course, I knew a lot of crooked ass lawyers and blah, blah, blah. And knew this and knew that, you know. Always scamming, always flimming. But they had me chained down in there. Had my hands handcuffed to the bunk. Had the legs shackled around my feet down on the bars, and I come to them. Well, the thing about them down there, they'll give you a drink of liquor if they know that you got to have one to keep from having to mess with the emergency bunch and the ambulance come and all that. So the old jailer walked up there and I said, damn, Troy. He said, Bruce, you was cutting up pretty bad last night. I said, well, y'all got me restrained pretty good, ain't you? But at the same time, in my heart of hearts, that moment of clarity, I knew it was over with. That morning I come to, I became a non-drinker. Now, you know, that was quite a revelation. I can remember saying, God, please help me, and then in the next prayer saying, oh, shit. I know what I got to do now, because, see, I had done been in and out of this deal for 7-8 years there. And I knew what I was up against. But the difference between that morning and all other mornings is my last drink. I had a lot of last drink. Was that I had a willingness to do whatever it took not to drink no liquor, not to take the next first drink. Well, after 3 weeks in that jail, my mama come down there, the greatest enabler ever had. Wondering why I wouldn't bail out, threatened to call the GBI to Herbert Hoover and everybody else because they beat me and made me crazy because I wouldn't bail out. I said, Mama, I'm not going anywhere. Everything's already all right. You're just going back home. And stayed in there for 3 weeks. And while I was there, there was a lady came. This is another God deal. And called me out and they brought me out to the little table out there. And she says, you remember me? And I looked at her vaguely familiar. I said, no, not really. She said, well, I'm Sandra Bacon Cosby. I thought to myself, good God, that little old ugly pimple-faced girl in the third grade. What the hell are you doing up in here? She said, I'm the regional director of Georgia Mental Health. Said, somehow or another, and I don't know how, I don't come to jails and visit people, but your name come across my desk on a piece of paper. I heard you'd been dead 3 or 4 different times. I said, no, I ain't dead. She said, well, I heard that. And she said, I just wanted to come and see for myself. I thought to myself, that kind of peculiar. What the hell, she, you know. Come to find out later that probation officer was the one that had slipped the paper on her desk. And she said, well, what you gonna do when you get out of here? And I said, well, I'm gonna do whatever I have to do, not drink no more liquor. She said, well, I'm gonna talk to some people I know and see if I can't get you in a place. Well, I already been the first step 5 or 6 times. This place that she got me in was called Mid-Step. I thought to myself, first step, mid-step, last damn step. But I had to wait 5 weeks to get a bed in that place. And I never did go to no views, reviews. Mine always had a veal on the end up. Milledgeville, Thomasville, Reedsville. I never did have no view. But I had about 10,000 hours community service and I don't know how many fines and probation. You know, when you're dealing with that kind of stuff and that just keeps piling up. But by the grace of God, I never did end up in Jackson worried about Bubba in that shower. That's God's true grace, folks. But then I got out of there and I went and stayed with my mama again. And the warden out of the prison camp come by and pick me up every morning in July. That was in May and then June and July. And after they throwed me out of jail, told me I couldn't stay in jail no more. I picked up sticks out of a dirt road for the motor grader to come by until that bed opened up over there at the nut house. By that time, I started reading the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, again, and started contacting some people. The shame's great after you keep doing what you keep doing. And those people, they're always there when you go back. You know, it gets to be haunting. I think maybe that's what killed the desire sometimes for somebody that don't make it back. They don't ever have another desire or strong enough desire to get back. But anyhow, I'd read the book and my big mama said, and I'd get drunk in them honky-tonks. I love them honky-tonk angels, God almighty knows. My daddy took me to a Black Cat Lounge in Albany, Georgia when I was about 6 years old. And he set me up on a stool in front of a pinball machine, give me a roll of nickels. God almighty damn, I thought I was in heaven. And they had these lady that walked around in there, and I didn't really know what it was all about, but they had this bulging coming out the top of a low-cut thing, you know. And they would hug me, and my hair was about as white as that lady's dress when I was that age. I hate to tell you all this, don't none of you repeat it, but my nickname was Puddin'. And they walk up to that bar stool, and they say, "Come here, Puddin'." And they grab me, and my nose and just get right in the eye. I don't know what these are, but I damn sure won't know more about them. And I pursued that diligently a great part of my life. But I'd go to Sunday school with my big mama, because she'd do whatever I wanted to if I went to Sunday school, and whatever I got into. You know, I'd get me an apple box and stand up, "Jesus loved me, this I know." Brucey boy wouldn't stick his hand in the candy jar. You know, I learned a lot about flim-flamming and common manipulating early. And that followed me as well as a lot of other things. But over there at that nut house, I walk up them stairs with my book under my arm. My mind said, "Well, I'll be running this damn place about a month." Well, guess what, folks? There were 7 female counselors there, including the head woman, Miss Reddy Bush was her name, and then 6 counselors, all females. Wasn't a man in the bunch. And they started reading my stuff right quick. And you know, I look at that as a test, and there was a lady there that she was the best looking one out of the whole bunch, and she always told me I need to be looking at the blackboard rather than her kneecaps. Nevertheless, I stayed there 6.5 months. And it was co-ed, and I'd wash dishes down in the bottom. I'd make my way up to the second floor on the broom and the mop. And then I'd either get caught smoking in the bathroom or in the broom closet with one of the ladies. I'd get busted back to washing dishes. But finally, there was a fellow that come there that brought outside meetings in. And I got to talking with him, and he said, "Boy, you going to take these steps, or you going to leave here and drink liquor again?" I said, "Well, I reckon I'll take the steps." Long story short, I did, and when I got through with my 4 steps, I called Miss Brenda. They wasn't there. They'd come and go, you know, 8-hour job, and we stayed there in-house all the time. I said, "Miss Brenda, I need to have a talk. If I don't, I'm probably going to leave here tonight, and I'm going to regret it." She said, "I'll be right down there." That was about 9:30. 2:30 that morning, we finished. She said, "My God, Bruce Jenkins." Then she told me some things about her. And I said, "My God, Miss Brenda." She said, "Now, I ain't going to say nothing about what you said, and you don't say nothing about what I said." And she was a God-type person. I'll say that because she was Christian, religious. And she told me many, many times, she said, "Bruce, God sent me here for you to help me and me to help you." Yeah. But I got out of there and had to come to Atlanta to one of them half nut houses. Downtown Atlanta. Now, you old country boy down here in Atlanta, Georgia, and you know, I'd never been nowhere with more than 1,500 people. Right over there on the corner of Renaissance and something else, big old building. About the only thing I knew, that old tall building down there that used to be a bank, see in there, with the top didn't look like it never finished. Anytime I get lost, I'd look up and I'd see it and I'd know where to go. But they told us we had to get a job there, and did. And he also told me that it was mandatory we attend outside meetings. One of them being an NA meeting. And it was necessary we have a chaperone to walk to the little church down the road there. Well, my chaperone showed up. And if they'd have pulled off them dresses, they could have been playing for the Falcons. Two big old black books make Joe look like a midget. Pastel dresses and hats on, hair on the leg about that long. And me walking down Peachtree Street, holding both hands, going to an NA meeting. Now, you don't think God got a sense of humor? You want to stay sober, boy? But that went on. I stayed there a couple of months, and I called Verlin, my son-in-law. I said, man, you got to come break me out of here. I got to get my monkey ass back to Rebus. And I started meeting people down there, Junie Tuttero, big deal back there in the back. We was in Biloxi one night. It was so foggy you couldn't see the end of the windshield wiper. And we spent the night over there in Pascagoula, and me and Junie and Jeff. And me and Junie got down on our knees when we finally got to the place we was going to sleep. Of course, we'd been gambling. And I remember old Jeff looking around, and he said, well, what in the hell y'all doing? I said, Junior's teaching me how to pray. Maybe you ought to take a look at it. And I think that was the beginning of another place that I'd gone to that brought me to a place of faith. Now, a lot's changed since then in my prayer life. You know, I have talks with my power that's just like me having a talk with Damon or Joe or Jeff or Susie or whoever. It's friendly. I don't really know a lot about worshiping, but I worship Alcoholics Anonymous in the spirit of it. Because why? It brought me from all of that I spoke to you all about tonight. That's not a part of my life anymore. Am I cured? Hell no. Never will be. Am I a saint? By no means. You know, some days a little bit of saint, most days, some days some of a bitch. You know? But we're afforded a program in Alcoholics Anonymous that gives us a break when we fall short of the mark, and all human beings that I've known are fallible. We're all gonna fall short. But you know, our personalities and our attitudes and our outlook, if you can't see something that's indeed miraculous in the way that changes, you need to get your monkey ass to Pearl Obstacle, something wrong, you know? I see some of the most wonderful things, and I'll pick on Jeff. He's sitting back there in the back. He ain't got no more business being here. Then I can't think of what. But he ain't got no business being alive. But he's back in this room. He's back in a place that he's secure in this time. And he'll be back in Alcoholics Anonymous again. I feel sure of that, dear. I'm going to put your ass on the spot. I feel sure of that. But now, I feel sure of that, but I don't know that because I know Jeff. And I picked Jeff because there's so many of us, including my blood, that restoration of sanity wasn't maintained. And when it wasn't maintained, that insidious snuck back in. And the next first drink seemed like a damn good idea. Back to hell we go. It's Friday night and we ain't drinking. Amen. Glory, hallelujah, pass the basket again. The people that I've known that have helped me the most in the rooms have been the ones that I thought the least of. That was my worst tormentors were my greatest teachers. I heard Damon use a word here a while back that I really picked up on. It's not that you don't care. It's not that you don't love. It's the fact that you become tempered somewhat. Our emotions don't affect us like they did when the world and the people in it dominated. Our skin ain't as thin as it used to be. You know. I was with this friend girl the other night, well, been a while back. And we was in a position to where we had disrobed somewhat. Moving right along, I thought we were making good progress. All at once, down to our underwear, she says, "You hurt my feelings the other day." I said, "My God, what a hell of a time to bring that up." Stepped on your toe at the fair or something, I don't know. But anyhow, I started blowing out compliments, folks, that you ain't never heard. Throwed a poem in there. You would have thought she was Queen Elizabeth. And while I was blowing, I looked around and a puff of wind hit it and blowed her underwear off. Thank God for feelings. Part of that's the truth, not all of it. Joe, what time you want me to stop? 5 minutes. I'm going to tell you a story that's absolutely true. Now, that's sort of like me catching a 5-pound bass. I ain't never seen a bass fisherman worth his salt that told the whole truth about his damn poundage on his fish. But long about the end of my drinking, I had got a settlement. I'd made it my business to come about one of these travel trailers. And down on our farm in the back 40 over there, we got a place called Buzzard Roost Swamp. And the reason they call it that is because it's so damn thick, about the only thing a buzzard can fly over it. But there's gators and cottonmouths down in there. Long story, I made me a path down in there with a dozer, and I backed that travel trailer down in there. I was going to go down there and drink. I died, Joe. And, you know, Speedy Moore would feel sorry for me and have a big memorial over that Gem City. They'd have my name up in lights at Rebo's. Old Bruce, he just couldn't get to me. So here I am down in that swamp in November, unclothed again. I got a plastic jug that's got Clorox rubbed on the side of it. I was bad about dropping my glass shine jug, so I got me a plastic. And my thinking told me, leave a little Clorox in it, freshen your breath up as you drink your liquor. I down in there and I was in them bamboos and I still got scars today, blood dripping off of me. Gallon jug of shine liquor in one hand, a big book in the other. Now, that's a haunting ass place to be, folks. But I decided what I was going to do was just go ahead and die. And the way I was going to do that, where it would be a big deal, I was going to get Gatorade. I was going to get eaten by alligator. Now, there was an old Indian used to come down our farm when the gators would get thick, and he would call them up to him during the time of the year that they're breeding in there. Called it grunt, and they go, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he'd get down at the edge of the water. Mm-hmm. Here come, and think it was a female. Well, now you can picture me naked and bleeding, arms dripping, drinking, shine, looking down on the edge of that creek. I look, and here he comes swimming up, eyes up out of the water, and I seen that nose, like about 8 or 9 foot. And once I seen that, I wasn't so damn sure I wanted to get Gatorhead. I was pretty tight drinking that giant liquor, but I thought, damn, maybe I just get mangled up a little bit, you know. But I'm there, and you know where the book of Alcoholics Anonymous speaks to us in the end of those days in that mire, that loneliness that you men know. When that mire settled down. Well, here I am now, down on that creek. The gator swims up there, and he gets about 6 foot from me, and he looks at me, and he turns, swims, walks out the bank on the other side. Now, you're talking about loneliness. When you don't even come up to gator bait, that's loneliness. But it wasn't long after that this story that I've told you began, and it's been a journey. I've got to meet people like Joe, like Susie, and Marshall over there, and I could go on and on and on with these folks. But it's been just a great part. You know, Damon told me when I went to get these hearing devices, he had to go with me and make damn sure I got them. He told the man at the place, he said, well, Daddy's biggest hearing problem is a listening deficiency. I don't know where he come up with that word. He got it from his mama. But I do listen more these days than I have in the past. Because, you know, if you listen to somebody that you might think is so full of it, there might be one sentence in that spiel that'll turn a light on. Damn. You know, the spirit of AA travels, and it comes to a place that none of us, you know, just like the incomprehensible demoralization state. You can't comprehend these miracles. They're mysterious. But I thank y'all again for having me here tonight. And if you didn't put enough in the basket, put some more. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here and telling us about the gator bait story. I might not remember that one. That was pretty good.